welcome. Our apologies for starting a little bit late. You know, we've not been in this room for a long time. So even our buses, which take us from the villages, use their approximation of the time they take to come to Parliament. It's a little bit out of the time that we wanted to be here. So our apologies for that. But I think we'll still be able to to do our work. I think we're about 25 minutes late. Honourable members, you remember that on the 21st of Feb, the Minister of Finance presented a budget. In that budget, amongst other bills that he tabled were the 2024 Division of Revenue Bill, 2023-24 Second Adjustment Appropriation Bill, the 2024 Gold and Foreign Exchange Contingency Reserve Defrayal Amendment Bill. Those were the three bills which were referred to the Standing Committee on Appropriations for us to process those bills. That's the background then, Honorable Chairperson, of the Financial and Fiscal Commission and your team. That's the background of us inviting you to interact with the committee. So we requested you to come and make your presentation, your independent presentation on the bills that were presented by the Minister of Finance. This will assist this committee to process the bills before it. So I think that will be the business of the day. And I must say it looks a little bit awkward to be in one room. We haven't done it for a long time. That used to be a norm. Dr. Nelia, thank you for joining us. We interacted with you virtually yesterday. But let's normalize it just before we part ways. I'll say more about that as we get to the end of our meeting. Darren, any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members and guests. Yes, we have apologies from Ms. Ntlangwini, Mr. Kwankwa, Mr. Sarupen, Mr. Mare, and Mr. Sheikh Imam. I just received an email from Ms. Tobias Pokolo. I don't know, she probably thinks we're having a virtual meeting. So I don't know if that should count as an apology as well.
We said that when we conclude the meeting, despite the other communication that we have made, that today's meeting will be physical. So, Chairperson and the team, the meeting, I'm taking it to you to make that presentation. Very generous today, Chen. You've got the full hour at your disposal. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and good morning to yourself and good morning to all the honourable members. Chair, just to introduce my delegation, I am accompanied by the research team who will introduce themselves briefly, and I'm also accompanied, Chair, by the interns of the Financial and Fiscal Commission. The FFC, we want to entice young people to come into the space where they interrogate the intergovernmental fiscal relations system. And we have young economists, young policy analysts with us who are the future of our country. And for them, it's an honor and privilege to be here as well. Thank you so much, Chair. So I would like the research team to just introduce themselves to the members.
Good morning, Honourable.
Honourable Chair and members, it's indeed thank you for this gracious opportunity to be in person for this engagement. My name is Chen Tsang. I'm the Head of Research of the Financial and Fiscal Commission.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Thando Ngozo. I'm part of the research team at IFFC.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sasha Peters, and I'm also part of the research research unit at the FFC within the National Budget Analysis Unit. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and all other colleagues present. My name is Babylon Tanda, a researcher within the FFC.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Kucho Makua. A researcher in the local government unit at the Commission. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. I'm Ms. Anthea Maraj, and I'm the acting CEO.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Kumoto Rusela, and I'm a research intern at FSC.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Kofi Mellon, and I'm a research intern at the FFC.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members and colleagues present. My name is Tsidi Shomura. I'm a research intern at the Financial and Fiscal Commission. Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson, members. Henry Eckstein, parliamentary liaison.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. My name is Tanit Suezulu, and I'm a research intern at the Financial and Fiscal Commission.
Good morning, Chair, and honorable members. My name is Lozin Jangasi. I'm a research intern at FFC.
Good morning, Chair, and honorable members. My name is Mtuduzi Nkosi, and I'm a research intern at FFC.
Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you so much. Before you proceed, Chair, just to finish what we have started, so that the research interns can also know who they are interacting with. My name is Fiso Buthelezi, the Chairperson of the Standing Committee on Appropriation. Darren
Arons, Committee Secretary.
Mashile Maubane, Committee Secretary.
I'm Kolisile Kaiso, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chairperson and ladies and gentlemen. Zola Mlenzana, member of the committee.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, everybody. My name is Humphrey Memezi. I'm the member of the committee.
Once again, good morning, Chair, members, and colleagues. My name is Oscar Matafa. I'm also a member of the committee.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, colleagues. My name is Nolu Yolo Magazi, committee researcher.
Sorry, thank you, Chair. I'm Nidia Orlandi. I'm from the Parliamentary Budget Office.
Morning, Siama from PMG. Thank you. Siama and Givi from PMG.
PMG, okay.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Chairperson and colleagues. I'm Sifiso Makakula, committees.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members and colleagues. My name is Musa Zamisa, a researcher to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, research interns. I think let me congratulate FFC for giving you an opportunity to be in the real world. So here we're in the real world, the decisions that we take in this committee, in this parliament, they've got real impact on the people. So it's no trial and error. We should try as much as possible that when we deal with these things, we know what they are impacted are going to be to the lives of people. So we really appreciate that people are interested in what we do in parliament. What I found, Chair, is that the work of parliament, let alone the committees, it's least understood by a number of people. I was talking to somebody text me and said, today we are having a minister visiting our institution. How do we behave and so on? How do we and so on and so forth? And said, not that I care that much, but we don't want to find ourselves on the wrong side. And I said, no, you should care, because those are the people who determine your life, whether you like it or not. Laws are made here. So I think it's very important that we should know exactly what happened in parliament, because whether you like it, I'm just saying, whether you care or you don't care, at the end of the day, the decisions that are being made, most of those decisions come from committees. Parliament, and for instance, there's going to be law which must be passed and so on. It gets presented in parliament, and parliament takes those laws to the committees, just like our committee, the Standing Committee on Appropriations. We deal with budget and budget-related matters, appropriations, appropriate money. So as I said, these bills that you are dealing with were presented by the Minister of Finance, who represents the executive, the cabinet. So what cabinet does with all the departments and so on when they formulate the budget, at the end of the day, there's a budget that they come up with which gets contained in different pieces of legislation. Those things, what Mr. President says, is a proposal to Parliament. Proposal to Parliament, because the Parliament can decide to say no, so there's no budget. Right? If, for instance, when it comes to these bills we are dealing with, this committee says no, there's no way the Parliament is going to say yes. Hence this interaction. So it's very important that we do understand these things. So I'm saying, Chairperson and your team is very, we commend the thing of getting young people into these things. There's public sector, there's private sector, both of them very important for our economy, for our lives. So it's very important that we get to know both ways. So amongst the bills that the minister presents on his budget, is the Division of Revenue Bill, which we are dealing with today. We'll hear more about it. There's an appropriation bill. Appropriation bill deals with the how we divide the resources that we are having amongst the different departments and institutions. That's called the appropriation bill. Right? It only comes after we've approved the Division of Revenue Bill. And then in between, there's all types of bills which comes in, for instance, like the ones that we are dealing with today, the Chief Raker and the Second Adjustment. So who do we meet here? We're saying, who are our clients at this committee, Standing Committee Appropriation? Anybody who uses government's money, we can call it anytime. Anyone. We unlike the other portfolios, for instance, Portfolio Committee on Transport, deals with transport and transport-related things and so on. Here, as a Standing Committee, anyone who deals with who appropriate money to can be called, and we do call them, from ESCOM to Transnet to RASA and all the government departments. They do appear before us because we give them money. So I just thought that the chairperson, let me add to what you have already told them, hearing it from the from the committee. So with those few words, we have got an hour maximum. If you take less, it's okay. We won't punish you for that. So go for it, Chairperson.
No, thank you so much to Chairperson and to members, and thank you so much for the warm welcome. Chair, going through the presentation, slide one, the second, yes, slide. Just to introduce the FFC in the context where we are now. We will recall, Chair, that we are celebrating 30 years of our democracy. And during this past 30 years, the Financial and Fiscal Commission has advised this House on the equitable division of revenue, has advised provincial legislatures, and has been a key custodian of the intergovernmental fiscal relations system. 30 years later, we can see that the intergovernmental fiscal relations system has been resilient, has remained transparent. Our budget system is transparent, as can be seen by the work of this committee. The Financial and Fiscal Commission is a key player in the budget process. As described in Chapter 13 of the Constitution, we advise government on the equitable share and allocations of revenue, on government guarantees, provincial taxes, municipal fiscal powers and functions, any envisaged provincial loans and any other loans. All these pieces of legislation can only be enacted when the recommendations of the Financial and Fiscal Commission have been considered. You have mentioned, Chairperson, that this committee, as guided by the Money Bills Amendment Procedures Act, also considers the amendment of financial bills that are presented to it by the Minister of Finance. And we are here to advise that committee as well when it considers those money bills. Next slide. Our presentation today essentially is going to touch on our analysis of Budget 2024 and the State of the Nation Address. We're also going to discuss the Gold and Foreign Exchange Contingency Reserve Account Defrayal Amendment Bill as presented by the Minister, the amendments to the 2023-24 Appropriation Bill. We'll also consider the 2024 Division of Revenue Bill at a provincial level and local government level. And then finally, I will come in with more detailed recommendations. I now want to hand over to the Head of Research to take us through the first part of the presentation.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Chair and members. 30 years ago, indeed, it serves as an important milestone, not just that, but also as a reference point for us in considering today's financial and fiscal environment. And indeed, various, as our President, Mr. President Cyril Ramaphosa said, 30 years ago, our economy was at a particular size, and today we have to look at in the context of the growth that we are experiencing today. Over the years, what has happened in terms of the GDP, but not only that, but also how much within that growth, gross domestic product, have we committed in terms of the state's revenue. Just to put it in context, so 30 years, we've grown, as the, Mr. President said, larger than around three times more. But in terms of our state's revenue accounts, we had 89 billion, and this we have already presented to the Joint Committee. And today, reaching, I mean, at that time, sorry, the expenditure side was 114 billion. And that is a deficit actually of closer to about 20-odd percent of the revenue at that time. Today we're doing much better in spite of all the considerations and concerns that we have with regards to debts and deficits, accumulating sovereign debt. And I think that is a key story that is being often missed in the discourse of our fiscal framework. But we will get we are looking forward to further engagements on the relevant questions thereof. Today, we are looking at 1.8 trillion in terms of our revenue budget, and with the expenditure amounting to 2.1 trillion. That 320 billion in terms of the deficit, like I said, is around 14% or so. So in terms of that, is that compared to 30 years ago, I think it is, there's little doubt, if any, that fiscal framework and fiscal control has been implemented, and if systems matures and evolves over time, and together with that IGFR system. And we'd have to look into that context when we also consider what does it mean when we are faced with these numbers, right, billions and then increasing up to trillions. What about referencing it? Often we do that in economics, inflation adjustments, to look at the real growth and so forth, but another way of measuring it is to look at the exchange rate. And if we look at the exchange rate and comparatively as a reference, right, is that, and our exchange rates are pegging to the, say, the US dollar, 30 years ago we were at 3.5 rand to a dollar to now 18.5. And so to convert all that and do some mathematical ratio conversions is that that 114 billion that we spent 30 years ago, if we place then now to today's context of 2.1 trillion, we get a 400 billion in that exchange rate and inflation adjusted amounts. What that means is basically that today, if we were to kind of tune the clock back and compare today's budget with the 30 years ago in terms of that exchange rate as a benchmark, we would be getting about 400 billion rand in that real exchange rate converted amount. So that is an expansion, right, from 114 billion to about 4 billion. So also around two, three times larger. So just with that, let me then hand over then to Tonto and the rest of the team to take you through today's presentation on the budget. And remember, 30 years ago, as the context to today's context, it has been a long path with many changes, but nevertheless, achievements along the road. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning again, Chair and honourable members. I will take you through the slide which basically is about the GFECRA Defrayal Amendment Bill. So, by way of context, honourable members, we start off by defining the role of this particular account, and what is important to us is that by way of illustration, we see this account as a shield that is protecting the central bank from the movements of exchange rates, which are unpredictable. Also, if you will, you can view it as a financial safety net that's shielding the central bank from the exchange rate fluctuation that will otherwise impact negatively its balance sheet. So that's the role of the account, and it's important for us to define the role so that we can better understand the position that we take when it comes to it. Secondly, we want to members to understand how this account generates the funds that are in it. So we emphasize the point that it's not a result of actual profit or asset growth, but the funds are generated precisely from the depreciation of the rand against the US dollar. So in other words, the increased value of the account is mainly due to the weakening of the rand compared to the US dollar rather than any real increase in wealth or assets. And it will become important why we explain this as we go further. So then when it comes to the position that we take as the commission, it's important to emphasize that then if we rely too much on it, it could leave us vulnerable globally. And we're saying that it's useful to think of it as a double-edged sword. In other words, it is helpful in times of trouble, but potentially weakening South Africa's financial resilience if we overuse it. Therefore, depleting the account excessively then will limit our ability to stabilize the rand's value, thus impacting on our economic strength and fiscal integrity. The last point that we're making then with regards to the bill, we acknowledge and agree with the aims of the bill, which is to strike a balance, ensuring that the account is utilized in a manner that ensures that there are enough reserves to weather exchange rate storms. However, what we're saying is that tightening spending and boosting economic growth to resolve a fiscal crisis is more important to us. And the reason we are saying that is because we view it as a short-term solution to a problem, a fiscal problem that is structural. And why are we saying that? Is because members will appreciate over the years from 1994 coming up to where we are, we've seen this increase in expenditure that has been has been permanent, and that has not been accompanied by any increases substantially on the revenue side. So what you have then is you have this gap that has persisted between your revenue and your expenditure. And therefore, our fiscal deficit has become structural in that sense. But more than that, our growth is also structurally low. And if that's the case, then it means you are battling with a long-term a structural growth problem on one side. You are also battling a fiscal deficit that is also structural. And before then, you begin even to stimulate the economy. What you have to look at then is how do you address these structural challenges first in the economy that you have before you can stimulate the economy. Chairperson, let me pause there then and allow Sasha to come in and continue the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Tando, and good morning again, Chair and members of the committee, as well as other colleagues present. This section provides a summary of the second adjustment appropriation bill for the 2020.
Please speak closer to the mic.
Oh, sorry. The section provides a summary of the second adjustment appropriation bill for the 2023-24 financial year. And as members will know, in terms of process, we had the original appropriation bill of 2023 that was tabled in February last year. This was followed by the adjustments appropriation bill, which was tabled along with the 2023 MTBPS in November last year, and this then is the second round of adjustments to the 2023 appropriation bill. So the table on that slide provides an overview of the additions and reductions to the votes, and overall the second adjustment appropriation bill contains additions amounting to 470 million rand and similarly sized reductions at 470 million rand. Chair, the largest addition in this bill amounting to 200 million is in respect of the Represented Political Parties Fund, and these allocations are aimed at assisting political parties as we prepare for the upcoming elections. This program was originally allocated 350 million rand with the 2023 appropriations bill, so last year February, Then with the adjustments in October, and now given the second round of adjustments, the total allocation to that fund now amounts to 850 million rand for 2023-24. So that's an addition of 500 million relative to the fund's initial allocation. While we appreciate that this allocation contributes to the functioning of political parties and is part of ensuring a vibrant democracy, I think from a budgeting perspective, we would advise that, in terms of planning and to ensure that allocations are smooth and to minimize significant increases and decreases at any one point in time, there can be better planning with respect to this, and we think that better planning is definitely possible given that the funding is allocated to existing political parties that are represented in Parliament and provincial legislatures. Chair, the Commission then notes the reductions to two of our long-standing public employment programs, namely the Community Works Program and the Expanded Public Works Program, or EPWP. The largest cut is to the Community Works Program, which will be reduced by 400 million, and this is accompanied by an 8 million rand cut to the EPWP. Now, both the Community Works Program and the EPWP were also cut in October last year when the Adjustment Appropriation Bill was tabled. And at that point, we saw 365 million rand being deducted from the Community Works Program and 112 million from the EPWP. So significant reductions to these two public employment programs in 2023-24. And given that these interventions are aimed at providing income support to participants, the Commission would hope that these adjustments were based on a comprehensive evaluation of the performance of the two interventions. We also do note the additions to the two votes within the peace and security cluster. This comprises 50 million to the justice and constitutional development vote and 45 million to the office of the chief justice. With respect to the justice and constitutional development vote, the bulk of the funding is has gone to the lower court services program and the NPA. And with respect to the addition to the office of the chief justice, the funds are directed to the Superior Court Services Program. And so as the Commission, we would support additions to programs that can drive improvements in the productivity and overall efficiency of our judicial and prosecution services. Finally, Chair, on this bill, we note that 15% of the total adjustments made are in respect of administration programs across several votes. And generally, as members will know, administration programs house your non-core or non-service delivery programs. And in the current fiscal environment, we've seen critical areas of service delivery having to be cut or deprioritized. We would advise that increases to this type of spending, non-core areas of spending, is kept to a minimum. Thank you, Chair. I'll hand over to my colleague, Sabelo.
Good morning again, Chairperson, and good morning to honourable members again. Yes, I'll be taking you through the giving of revenue bill as it relates to provinces. Key to note here, Chair and honourable members, is that, or to remind honourable Chair and members, that provinces are about 95% dependent on fiscal transfers, as they do not have, or they have limited capacity to raise or to generate revenue due to the fact that provinces are mainly responsible for functions such as your providing your education and health, and those are social functions. So they are unable to generate their own revenue in order to determine or to back up their fiscal transfer that they receive from the Division of Revenue. So this makes provinces to be more vulnerable to policy reprioritization issues, to issues relating to fiscal conservation or any issues that have to do with the reduction of funding that is made available to provinces. And then this affects, because provinces are responsible for mainly for providing some key infrastructure such as schools, clinics, etc., etc. So if they are under pressure, then they are unable to respond to the demands and needs for infrastructure that they have to deliver. And given the fact that they will be unable to cut on compensation for employees, for example, then they tend to reduce their spending on key infrastructure. Then it makes, and that affects the service delivery in that way. So key to this other thing to lift here or to emphasize is that there is a bargaining process that takes place outside of the budgeting process, and provinces have to comply and make sure that they do comply, they do make those adjustments to the cost of living for public sector employees. And then again, what do they do if they don't have enough funding? They will have to cut on their spending on infrastructure and service delivery. So those are key things that we thought we should note before we go to the discussion about what has been allocated. And the other thing that is important is that they generate revenue, or fiscal transfers are mostly are in the form of the provincial equitable share and from the conditional grants. Then provincial equitable share again determined by a formula which takes into account some demographical changes, which are informed by statistics that have been collected by the Census A, that be your mid year. For example, in most cases we see that there's a time lag in these issues. For example, here we're noting that population data that was released in 2022 could only be used in 2024, so there's a gap. There's a gap in the process. Next slide. For this slide, Chairperson and members, just shows what has been added and what has been reduced in terms of funding provinces. Key to note here is that we know that provinces are being funded through the equitable share and conditional grants, as well said, is that overall for 2024-25, that is the average growth from 2023-24 to 2026-27, average growth there you can see in that table is about 3.8%. So because government is faced with these revenue challenges, is unable to provide funding to the level in which it should, then you can see that growth there. Here we're talking about nominal growth over that period. It's far below inflation. That would put pressure to provinces in terms of spending. And again, what you could see for 2023-24 to 2024-25, for example, the increase have been from 706.4 billion to 729.5 billion, which really, here we're talking about the nominal, it's just increased nominal numbers. If you take into account inflation, then the increase is not significant at all. And then the graph below, it shows what has been added and what has been reduced to this. Remember, we said key funding instruments is through the equitable share and from conditional grants. So here you could see that there's been an increase in the positive adjustment in the equitable share, and then there's a slight or insignificant adjustment in the conditional grants. But again, the total is a bit higher because we combine these two, it's a bit higher. But having done that, again, on the right-hand side, you see some deductions to balance up to show the net effect at the end. Because you see that what has been added to the provincial equitable share, provincial equitable share, again, was reduced later on because that money was for the compensation of employees negotiations that were reached for 2023. Then there hasn't been any positive adjustment in the equitable share, taking into account that money was shifted to conditional grants to cater for the COE. And again, going to conditional grants, again, there's been a reduction. And remember that provinces are unable to raise their own funding. They are dependent on these conditional grants for infrastructure delivery, such as school infrastructure, health, etc., etc. then the net effect there is 8.2 billion at the end for 2024-25. Next slide. This next slide, Chair and Honourable Members, we just took some of control grants for provinces just to illustrate how they have been reduced for 2024-25 financial year. Key to note there is that the human settlement development grant has been reduced by 1.5 billion for that year, and then the other grant is informal settlement upgrading grant, which has been reduced by 1.2 billion. Here we are noting, Chair, with concern at the FSC, because, you know, with high level of unemployment, with cost of living that are rising, a number of people, households, would not afford their own housing opportunities. Then reducing these grants, which are aimed at improving housing or living conditions of people who are unable to afford their own housing, then it will have a negative impact. And again, given the high rate of informal settlements everywhere, then you could see this will have a negative impact in with respect to the delivery of housing and eliminating of the backlog with respect to this. And again, the other grant that we are illustrating here that has been decreased is Ilimalizima. Ilimalizima is one of the grants that we believe that is key, particularly given this debate about food security and rising cost of everything. Then reducing this grant will have a negative impact again and will threaten our position with respect to food security. And there's a reduction again on the district health program. And in recent years, Chair, here to note is that the role of the district health program has been expanded of late, that it includes programs like HIV prevention, ARVs, TB, etc. So with that expanded role, but given this reduction on the other side, then it means that we could see delivery being affected. And given that, if you look at the numbers, recent numbers, as they relate to the number of infection, people that are HIV, number of infection is going up, but the grant is going down, then it means we'll be going back. And again, the rollout of the ARVs again will be impacted. Lastly, what we wanted to note here is the next slide. This slide just illustrates some of the trend trajectory on some of the key grants, and you could see that the reduction on the HSDG has been happening for years, and we are nowhere to catch up to where we were in 2020-21. Then that again, I've explained that it will have a negative impact with respect to the improving living conditions of those who cannot afford. But the positive thing to note here, Chair, is that we've seen that the ECD, the nutrition part of the ECD has been corrected, and I think the increase has been 5.1 over the MTF. And we note with appreciation that at least this one is protected, this program is protected. But again, we are noting that, or emphasizing that, though it is protected, but it's growing at a rate which is less than the food inflation. Food inflation is higher than this. And then we are of the view that maybe if the rate was at least in line with inflation, then that would make a difference. And again, we are noting that the grant will be piloted at the national level. Though we support that notion because it's at a piloting stage, but we are of the view that later on, then it should be implemented by the provinces and being a direct grant. On that note, Chairperson, let me hand over to Kuzu to take us through the local government staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Sabelo. Good morning again, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'll be taking you through the last section of our presentation that looks at the division of revenue as it relates to the local government sphere. The local government sphere is still confronted by a number of challenges which really are not new.
In the 2021-2022 Auditor General Report on Municipal Audit Outcomes, the Auditor General has reiterated the fact that a significant proportion of municipalities are still in a state of distress, while the fiscal health of a large number of municipalities has deteriorated over the past few years. The report also reveals that 66 out of the 257 municipalities in the country are dysfunctional and are really struggling to fulfill their service delivery mandate. And in addition to this, we have also seen service delivery in a number of municipalities, particularly the coalition-led councils, which this paints a very ugly picture for the local government sphere, as municipalities, as we know them, are the coal face of service delivery in the country. So when there are these political squabbles between councils which halt then service delivery, it becomes a problem to the end user of these services. But over and above these problems, Honorable Chair, the Commission notes with concern some chronic challenges or struggles that municipalities face, many of which stem from deficiencies in capacity within our municipalities. And as the Commission, we contend that in order for municipalities, in order to support municipalities in carrying out their mandate for improved service delivery, and in terms of their developmental role, both national and provincial governments must work work together to bolster municipal investment and financing, while also revitalizing local development and creating jobs and advancing welfare through the provision of service, essential services. Next slide, please. Thank you. So as you've mentioned in the previous slide here, that municipalities are the coalface of service delivery. It is important to underscore the point that they should not in anyhow compromise on service delivery. And it is also important for the Division of Revenue to continue to respond to this call. Over the 2024 medium-term expenditure framework, we've seen that the local government sphere is set to be allocated total transfers amounting to 531.8 billion in indirect transfers and 22.7 billion in indirect local government conditional grant transfers. And a huge bulk of this will be allocated through the local government equitable share, which will amount to 317.9 billion, while conditional grants will receive 163.2 billion, and 50.6 billion will be allocated through the general fuel levy sharing with the metropolitan municipalities. In terms of increases, nominal increases, we see that local government allocations are set to increase over the MTF from 9.7% in the current year to 9.9% in the outer years of the MTF. Thank you. So on this slide, we display the average growth rates, and we see that the increase in the local government equitable share allocation is the main driver behind the annual average growth rate of 5% over the 2024 EMTF. And the Commission welcomes the government's efforts to keep the form of funding consistent, while also as it protects the subsidies to the poor. The Commission also notes that the redistribution of funding within the local government equitable share in the current year amongst the different categories of municipalities, noting that the smaller, more rural municipalities are receiving more funding via the local government equitable share. So we welcome this redistribution as municipalities, or these forms of municipalities, the smaller and more rural municipalities, will be helped in alleviating some of the financial pressures that they face. But while we also support the greater funding that are allocated via the local government equitable share to the poorly resourced municipalities, would like also to reemphasize the importance of the spending capacity of municipalities, because in the absence of the ability of the recipient municipalities to absorb and effectively spend these funds, the targeting of the additional funds through the local government equitable share may also contribute to an increase in unproductive and inefficient expenditure and poor service delivery outcomes. So the government should improve efforts over the medium term to ensure that such municipalities are able to deliver on their service delivery mandate. Thank you. Next slide. So in terms of conditional grants, we note that there will be several reductions and reprioritizations that will affect the local government's share over the 2024 medium-term expenditure framework. And the reductions will affect the integrated national electrification program municipal grant, the municipal disaster response grant, the PTNG, the energy efficiency demand side management grant, and both the direct and indirect components of the regional bulk infrastructure grant. And the commission notes that the grant framework of the USDG has been amended so to include spending on new and existing bulk infrastructure, wherein 27.8 billion will be distributed between the 8 metropolitan municipalities. Furthermore, we note that the neighborhood development grant will be allocated an additional of 650 million in the 2024-2025 financial year, with the intention of supporting government's efforts to create jobs. But now, given that this is a capital grant, the Commission recommends that the transferring department should do a thorough evaluation to make sure that financing and functions of the grant should match the strategic goals or the objectives of the grant. Over the MTF, again, we see that 6.9 billion will be allocated for capacity building grants and other transfers. And the Commission observes that a substantial 17.3% annual decline in this category of allocations to the local government sphere. And we'd like to note that for a sphere of government that continues to be confronted with capacity issues, this is concerning. We also note and we welcome the 1.95 billion that will be provided for the purchase of smart meters through the ESCOM Municipal Relief Bill, as this will indeed improve the cost coverage ratios of municipalities while also improving revenue collection, which has been a problem for quite a number of years now. Lastly, Chairperson, in terms of the conditional grants, we'd like to know that in the 2023-24 submission on the Division of Revenue, the Commission recommended that government should speed up the implementation of the district development model, which will indeed require funding. And we note that National Treasury has responded to this call, and the uptake of this recommendation would like to note that is a step towards the right direction. In this regard, we see that 454 million will be allocated for the DDM via the Municipal System Improvement Grant, and it's much welcomed by the Commission. Chair, thank you. I would like to hand over now to our Chairperson for concluding remarks. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kutso. With regards to the recommendations of the Commission on the Gold and Foreign Exchange Contingency Reserve Bill, the Commission's view is that the use of this account to the tune of 150 billion rand over the medium term is in effect weakening South Africa's strategic position and capability to stabilize our currency value, because the environment that we are currently in is quite volatile and South Africa's financial and fiscal integrity is at risk. The Commission, however, supports the terms and conditions of the bill that it will ensure retaining sufficient funds to absorb the exchange rate swings. With respect to the appropriation bill as presented, the Commission notes that there has been cuts to public employment programs such as the EPWP and the community workers programs. These cuts in these programs should be based on a thorough evaluation of their performance. Furthermore, in the current fiscally constrained environment, the Commission views the allocations to non-service delivery programs such as administration and other non-core programs as something that should be considered and something that should be limited. Second slide. Next slide. With regards to the division of revenue at a provincial level, the Commission welcomes the additional funding allocated to the National Schools Nutrition Program over the 2024 medium-term expenditure framework. However, the Commission recommends the strengthening and improvement of spending to ensure that there is alignment with the objectives of the grant, and consideration must be given to linking the rate of increase in this grant to that of food inflation. The Commission also notes and supports the piloting of a nutrition support program within ECD to be undertaken by the National Department of Basic Education. However, it recommends that once the piloting is completed, the program should be implemented by the provinces. The Commission also notes that there has been reductions to the ILIMA LITSIMA program and the District Health Program grants. Therefore, the Commission recommends that the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development and the Department of Health elaborate on how these reductions rather are likely to affect service delivery and plans, and whether plans are in place to mitigate the effects thereof. With regards to the local government proposals on the Division of Revenue Bill, the Commission notes that the proposed increase in the local government equitable share allocation. We note that this increase is mainly driven by the basic component of the formula. Therefore, the Commission would like to emphasize the need for a comprehensive review of the local government fiscal framework to address the systemic challenges facing the sphere. The Commission also welcomes the reprioritization and additions made to the conditional grants over the 2024 medium-term expenditure framework. The Commission suggests that value for money should be actively pursued to ensure that there is efficient utilization of these funds. Lastly, the Commission recommends that non-financial information must also be included in the consideration of the reporting framework for conditional grants. This inclusion of non-financial information will facilitate better monitoring and evaluation of grant performance. Thank you so much, Chair. That concludes the submissions of the Financial and Fiscal Commission.
Thank you, Chair, and the team, Team FFC, for those presentations. Honourable members, let's check the presentations from FFC. I know you'd like to interact with them, comment, ask questions. So let me see, where do we start? Okay, let's see. Honorable Lindana, number one. Honorable Matafa. Honorable Lenzaro Matafa, Honorable Memezi, Honorable Kaiso. You know we've got three bills. So as members ask questions, you will note from your side, Chairperson, who's dealing with which question from your team. Honorable members, obviously, you know I won't limit you in terms of time. But as dealing with economic matters, let's try to be economic with time. Let's start, Honorable Lenzana.
Yeah, I've even forgotten.
that there used to be this animal called Mike. Thanks, Chaperson, and let me start by welcoming this presentation from FFC. I saw that they have deliberately invited PBO to be part, and if there were questions which I asked, you know, to PBO, I would have now seen they will not be necessarily the same, because look, sir, the introduction by FFC is reminding us of their responsibilities as per Chapter 13 of the Constitution. And I was very happy, particularly when it comes to the allocation, money allocation, if I can put it, be it to provinces and what have you. And the history that they are putting, bringing us back 30 years up to now. Chair, it's just a comment which links to my question, that when FFC reminds me of the 30 years back, it also reminds me that I think it was either in the second or third term of parliament where I was still a very young, energetic community leader by then. I summoned FFC to visit our area so as to influence them in terms of particularly the provincial equitable share allocation. I asked this question from PBO, but it's more relevant to FFC. As to when I know that you usually make an impact in terms of your submissions to the ultimate decision in terms of allocation of revenue. Now, is it a desktop exercise that you are doing where you just punch in numbers and then at the end of the day you would say because of that province, that municipality has got this number then turned into money and all? Or do you consider what is actually happening, the circumstances in local government and provinces? Yesterday or that day, I, for instance, Chaperson, mentioned that there would be COVID-related calamities. There would be disasters and all, which would then force appropriation of money, according to my own analysis, following such, not necessarily the desktop exercise. Do you do that? That was my first question, Chair. The second one would be on management of non-expenditure. I hear, and also appreciate that there is money injected for the realization of the district development model. That one is appreciated. But now, my question, Chair, would be, is there no way, FFC, that we can begin to say to government, look, through the district development model, let there be synergy, let there be coordination, and the responsibility of financial management. When I'm talking financial management, I'm talking, Chair, on a range of issues. Fortunately, I've got interns today. They would understand what I mean. That when you are talking financial management, it moves from the left
to the rand. You don't just chow money. You first cook, then the pot, and then you dish. All that is financial management. Now, won't that at least assist if it is centralized through the district development model? The third question, Chair, I am not shooting down, Chair, the ululation and the praises sung in terms of our performance in the past 30 years. But despite the assertion that the South African economy is three times larger than it was 30 years back, why, in the opinion of the FFC, has government had very little success in addressing inequality, poverty, and unemployment? This would link to growth also. I heard you talking of sluggish growth, and some people who are more clearer than myself in terms of understanding economics would say, even if there was growth, that growth wouldn't be recognized if there is unemployment. So what is your take there? You are saying in slide 5, I'm looking at this slide 5, if the fiscal budget has escalated by more than 250% over the last 30 years, why, in your opinion, has this not necessarily translated in the increased economic productivity and sustainable growth? This is what I say, I'm trying to put forward, Chair, that at least there should be realization of one by the other if there is some, you know, activities which is impactful. This one, I ask to PPO. I have a view, Chairperson, that looking at the manner in which our economy is in the country, performance in infrastructure development programs, particularly on the expenditure side, could have an influence on trying to dampen or lower down the levels of unemployment. It goes back to that economic growth domestically which I was talking about. Now, how are we performing? Are you able to critique the government as to our performance in that regard? Linked to that, Chairperson, do you have a forecast wherein there would be balance between revenue generation and the expenditure? You know, your slide 5 drew interest in me. Hence then, I foresee, Chairperson, a situation where there would be a balance created between revenue generation and expenditure, such that there would be no borrowing or very little, which then means this question of servicing debt would then be something or which would be history. The Chairperson, is my imagination of a national democratic society where unemployment and sluggish economic growth shall be no more. Maybe you understand me better. Then the last one, Chair, on reprioritization of the budget through the second adjustment bill. How is the overall non-expenditure and over-expenditure or performance by departments and entities generally? I'm asking this, Chairperson, because we are now more about winding down the work of the committee as we are looking towards closing the doors of the sixth parliament. If perhaps you could give us
your views. Lastly, in the past 5 years, we have been talking about our envisaged implementation of the zero-based budgeting instead of the current baseline approach. Now, in your recommendations, you are not exactly talking about slide 20 or page 20. In your recommendations with respect to the 2023-2024 second adjustment appropriation bill, regarding the second adjustment appropriation bill, the Commission recommends that bullet 1, cuts to strategically important public employment programs should be based on a thorough evaluation of their performance. Is this not what I see, Jefferson, as zero-based budgeting in action? Thanks and sorry for taking this long.
So it's okay, Honorable Lenzana. This being our last interaction in this administration with the FFC, so we are allowed to cough out. Honorable Matafa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Doctor, and your team for a very insightful presentation. I'm going to be very brief, Chair. I might be long, but I'll still appear to be brief after Congressional has spoken. I just have a few questions, but before I pose them, let me appreciate the presentation. The first one is a direct question. What is your view on the wealth tax? The second one is that Tando speaks of the economic predicament that the country finds itself to be structural. In nature. So my question would be that has the FFC conducted any research to determine if whether the structural reforms that the President and the Minister of Finance keeps mentioning are realistic and they are responsive to the structural defects that the Commission has identified? Honorable Nanzana spoke to the issue of the size of the economy today and then. But I'm also agreeing with him that the economic growth without jobs will be meaningless. Now, flowing from his comments, I just want to check if whether the FFC has done any analysis to see if whether other important stakeholders like the private sector are contributing to the turning around of the fortunes of the country. Because many commentators and opposition parties speak about the economic growth as a silver bullet to addressing unemployment. I disagree because during the era of Comrade President Thabo Mbeki, the economy was averaging 4.2% growth, quarter on quarter. Inflation was sitting at 5.7, but still jobs did not follow that growth. So for me, I believe that there is much more that is required other than economic growth to ensure that employment is realized in South Africa. So I just wanted to check if whether you can expand your thinking. It doesn't only have to be about the private sector. If there are other players that you think that must pull their weight, please feel free to add in your response. Having said that, Chair, I just want to touch a little bit on the mandate of the Reserve Bank, which according to the Constitution is to protect the currency value. Other than inflation targeting, increasing borrowing rate, reducing borrowing rate, have you noticed any other measure that the Reserve Bank would have taken to assist protect or insulate the country from currency volatility? Because in the main, when the currency goes up or down, it's the government that is always blamed. But sitting here, I see some efforts from fiscal discipline that the Minister of Finance is busy implementing, the noise that he's making about containing the sovereign debt. For me, those are instruments that one can use in order to contain the volatility of the currency. The Reserve Bank, what is it doing? Because I don't think inflation targeting is the only instrument available at their disposal. So I just wanted to hear your view on that one. On the division of revenue, allocations to provinces, slide 12 is worrying for me, Chair. And it's worrying because Honorable Mlenzana speaks about if there's rationality on the cuts of on the budget allocated to employment initiatives. Now, looking at slide 12 and taking from what Honorable Mlenzana has mentioned, I'm looking at the reduction on the Human Settlement Development Grant. I'm looking at the reduction in the Informal Settlement Upgrading Grant. For me, Chair, one of the objectives of this administration and the ruling party is to fight inequality. And homelessness, for me, it's one of the elements that shows inequality. It can be due to income disparities or whatever facts that will contribute to that. So if those that are vulnerable are not assisted by government, who will? So my question is, in your general observation, do you believe that thoroughgoing assessment and decisions were taken in effecting the cuts where they have been effected? And would we, as government, still be able to achieve the goals that would have motivated the budget and flowing from the manifesto of the country, and not forgetting the NDP goals? Chair, I see this cut also as another spear to the rib of the poor, because over and above this cut, you also struggle with the issue of underspending. Now, where I come from the city of Tshwane, we are losing close to 2.6 million from informal settlement upgrade that the city is unable to spend or even commit for future programs. How can we address this particular issue of underspending, especially as it relates to conditional grants? The last one, Chair, is again related to municipalities. I'm just interested to find out, having mentioned those two reductions, besides disruptions to product programs that are in the pipeline, the livelihood and lives of residents, and adversely impacting planning within municipalities, what are the direct or indirect consequences of the 7.2 billion reduction in the informal settlement upgrading grant? Because there would be. I think that in most of the IDPs, these particular programs would have been factored. Now, when there are these cuts, what then does it leave these particular municipalities, and what do we say when I go to Ipirileng and Mweplas or Ward 41, Chair, in Komash, of the people who are in informal settlements where we are deployed to do construction? Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Honorable Matafa. Honorable Memes, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to join my colleagues in appreciating the presenters. I think they did their work very well. But it's also giving us a bit of a problem in terms of the people we are representing. We are representing the people of South Africa. The majority, or 80% of them, were marginalized for many, many years before they, in 1994, voted a new government. meaning the government whom we all represent, we are, when they look at us, yourselves as people who are in the offices of government in various capacities, they look at you, at us, with hope that these are the reps of the government. So which means we have similar duties, you know. What is expected from us is also expected, because if we push the same way, then the people of South Africa will be happy. So we'll see the difference. But from where one sits, it's like we're not really making that difference, in particular for the poor. So we then expect yourselves, because you are guys that are more learned in finances, so your ideas should be able also to give some advices as to what needs to be done, so that we don't think while we're supposed to cry. There are so many questions one would want to ask, but let me just start with this one. Would the FFC recommend an amendment in laws, in particular those directly compels the public sector wage negotiations should consider or be bound by the fiscal framework, so that we ensure that at least the people on the ground at least have a bit of share in terms of the service delivery, so it's not really going while they are looking. The other question I would want to put, progressively government has been decreasing the ILIMA LIZIMA grant. And has the FFC undertaken any study to assess whether the grant has achieved its intended objectives, or how can the grant be reconfigured in its design to improve the spending and the outcomes? Because one would say, in fact, you have said it hasn't been performing. So then if it hasn't been performing, then something must be done, so that we can't fail to spend when the people of South Africa expect so much from us. So your advices would help us to as well make the necessary noise. Maybe the last question, Chair, would be based from slide 13 with regard to the ECD nutrition program. In the opinion of the FFC, does this change from the direct to indirect sufficiently address the challenges of lack of economies of scale, supply chain bottlenecks, improved monitoring and evaluations? Because indeed, I think you would have heard a number of us, we are focused, we are worried about these bottlenecks, because it seems the progress, what the people are expecting, is not that visible as we would want to see it. I think my colleagues have already mentioned my favorite question, which is the biggest worry for us. I guess you also see it, you know, the failure to spend the budget is by our department.
is the biggest worry. Everybody wants the budget, but once given the budget, they have no time to spend. They have time to do with the shopping, visit friends, but every month they expect government to pay them. So it's always our worry. So we look upon yourself as well, if you can give advices, what do we do? Because the expectation on the ground is that we must spend the budget. Failure to spend is a blame to all of us in government. Chair, let me pause there.
Honorable Mesi, thank you very much. Honorable Kaizo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and greetings, Dr. Mbava and your team. I think my colleagues have finished everything that I wanted to ask, so they have spared you time, but I just want to go to two or three things, matters here. The one before I forget, in your concluding remarks, Dr. Mbava, you made reference to the issue of declining allocation funds for grants, district health grants and agriculture, ILIMA project. I think also the basic education, if I'm not mistaken, the basic education. So of which it's a serious concern that maybe as a committee we need to call those departments, consider convening them during the appropriations bill to come in there and engage them in as far as that recommendation is concerned. Now on the, I just want to check to what an extent does the State of the Nation's address reflect on the division of revenue bill and the second adjustment appropriations. I know there are key important areas there which are obvious, but my worry was the same as the worry that my colleagues have raised on the reduction of the community works program and the public works. So that worry is being created by the fact that we are looking for growth of the economy, and also we are saying there's a high level of unemployment and poverty. So if one underlies the two, you can see there's a contradiction at the end of the day, which then undo the whole thing or aim or objective. So I just want to know to what an extent generally do you analyze, or the FFC has analyzed, the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill with regard to SONA. Does it actually address what the President has raised in as far as SONA is concerned? Let me not go to the issues of, they have been covered, but on the issue of GFECRA, yes, the FFC raised its concern around it, but I think, well, it is a positive move, a principled move. In as far as GFECRA is concerned, you know, to intervene. Because even if, I mean, well, you may say it is a double sword, but I regard it as a principled move, because you would not sit with such a surplus or
I don't. You cautioned us not to say it's a surplus or a profit. It's not, but it is of for particular reason that we've got that to deal with the issues of exchange rate. But then, what I want to get from you is whether do you think this GFRECRA you can utilize it, or you can have there can be a particular, you know, framework that on which to utilize in which to utilize this. In future, so that we don't randomly come when there is floods, say, hey, let's go to GFRECRA. So it's very haphazard. So that it then seek to address what you said is a double sword. Rather, we should have a framework at least, you know, it should not only to serve a debt, because only a debt, because if you're saving a debt, there is no further income. But if you invest in infrastructure, for instance, you can think of, oh, okay, there could be some return on investment on this particular implementation. So, yeah, I just wanted to get that. And then lastly is on the issue of there's a what happened to this now? Lastly, it was on the issue of the issue of the mandate of the Reserve Bank. I think it has, my colleague has covered me, because I really do feel that it's under, you know, utilizing its mandate. It is still based on the, you know, previous administrations of the colonial rule. So don't you think that, why don't you boldly advise on how best in future can Treasury then look at the, or what should be done? Because obviously it's implementing change policy on the mandate of the Reserve Bank, looking at how best it can be implemented. Yeah, thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Kaiser, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dr. Mbava and the team, for the presentation. The budget in general is trying to get into the primary balance surplus in this financial year. So the question from my side, is that a prudent thing to do? Two, are we not too aggressive in achieving this primary balance surplus? Obviously, as you know, that when you do these things, at what cost are we doing that? You make the point that depleting the size GFRECRA is concerned, depleting the account will be disastrous. Why are you saying that? Because the bill is not talking about the depletion of this. Perhaps related to this bill. Okay, even before I ask the question, let's just make this point that the GFRECRA is not a South African Reserve Bank money, it's government's money. Right? It's our account, which is this government's account, which is being held by the Reserve Bank. Jog your memories, when this account was in trouble, when it was in deficit in 2002, government had to pay in 28 billion rand. So what is good for the goose should be good for the gander. When is it surplus and our money? Let's leave the mechanics of how it's used and so on. I know, for instance, there's a cost of about 8 billion rand that we are going to incur because of this. So when the finances of the country are in a problem, I'm sure you tap on all the resources that you are having without being irresponsible. But here's the question. There's a proviso here, and that money from GFREC should be used to service the debt. Are you happy with that restriction? There's a school of thought that is too limiting to say it could have been used. There are other better places and more effective ways and more impact to the economy that we could have. Why restrict it to the servicing of the debt? I just want to get your view. Remember, we are dealing with, although there are a lot of domestic issues which put us to where we are, but again, let's not be oblivious of the external shocks that we are dealing with in the budget. Not starting yesterday, not starting 5 years ago. From the global economic crisis, you remember, we've never recovered from that. It's an external shock that we're dealing with. Then you had COVID-19, which sometimes we decide to forget as to exactly the impact of that in the economy of South Africa, but not just South Africa, the economies of the world. So to deal with extraordinary things, you do have also to take extraordinary measures, including tapping on your resources in GFREC. In fact, we congratulated the Minister that finally he has gone into that account. Honorable Kaiso has been very vociferous about that. When we are in such a problem. So at least when it came to the budget, we saw the minister moving in that direction. What I'm stressing is that when that account was in trouble, we also came in. So but the question for me is about the limitations. And don't remember, don't forget colleagues or members, colleagues from FFC, that there are all sorts of agreements which must be agreements between the South African Reserve Bank governor and the minister as to how and when you tap into this resource. So the question of always having a buffer in that account is something that is top on the list of the Minister of Finance and the South African Reserve Bank. A different question. I just want to, what's your take on, I think this is more about the second adjustment appropriation, about taking money from non-performing programs and redirecting them to where it's needed most. I think it has been said many times here that one of the biggest challenges of the fiscals and of the country is lackluster performance of the economy. The economy which has not been growing at the rate that is required. It has been growing, but not at the rate that is required. You remember that the NDP wanted us to grow at 5%. Plus, and as you know, that today we are hovering around 1%, which is far lower than the growth of the continent. In the continent, our economies which are growing at about 5%, at even 8%, and so on, we are far lower than that, right? So, talking about government, especially let me focus on local government. What do you think local government should be doing to try and also be part of enhancing growth? I get an impression that other levels of government and even other departments, they look at only certain departments to say these are departments which are responsible for growth. From where I'm seated, everybody, all departments, all levels of government have a very important role to play so that we have got this inclusive growth. So I do think local government should be doing, and they're not doing to make sure that that happens. How are they, for instance, a bottleneck in that process? We carry a very unfortunate title as South Africa, a country which is bestowed with all sorts of minerals, wealth, one of the best climates in the world as far as agriculture is concerned, but to carry the title of being the most unequal society in the world. Gini's coefficient well above 0.7, over around 0.73 and so on. There's something that we're not doing, and we're not doing correctly. What should we do? How can the budget assist that? Perhaps it's already related to what Honorable Matafa is saying, that with those economic growth numbers that we had before, we spoke about unemployment, but again, the inequality numbers are just going the wrong direction. And the young people in here must know. I'll give you a session because you must answer these questions. I'll give you at the right time. I want you to, the questions that you have been asking, I would like to tap into a brand new intellectual capacity, what you have been reading. Because for me, if economics doesn't deal with these things, we may as well just fold our books and go and run. Okay. So yeah, that's that. It's more about inequality. Where exactly what we should be doing. We've always said education, it's a best way. We encourage you must go to school and so on. But you would have seen doctors doing saying that they're not having a job, and it's sort of discouraged a number of people. I'm using them as an example, I mean other people. But the president has, as FFC, the president has said, we are going to absorb those young people, and that's something that we are supporting from our side. But then I'm saying, in the budget, do you think that is being catered for? Is it there in the budget? Because when you say we're going to absorb them, we must pay them. The perennial problem the colleagues have spoken about, that problem, the question of availability of budget, it's one, as you guys would say, it's a necessary but not sufficient condition to deal with these things. At local government, how can we, what should be done to make sure that the little resources that are being spent effectively, efficiently, and for the purposes that they are supposed to be used for? We've had sessions here with some of the local governments, met mayors, where we're saying we are having this transport grant, and we know from the towns and cities that we are coming from that you need this grant. But it's being taken back to Treasury because we are not using them. We got Treasury, we got Department of Transport, we got those municipalities here that... Why? What can be done? Sometimes... okay, let me just start answering the question. But the question is, what do you think should be done at the local government to make sure that every money that is being allocated and appropriated is being used at that level and used efficiently, proficiently, and for the purpose that it was aimed for? I would leave it at that, and then at Mbava, back to you. The way you're looking at me, Honorable Paiso, what would you like to say? Do you have something?
Yes, just one question that I forgot to ask. I see here on the presentation you are saying that you have, the Treasury has been saying it has been utilizing or trying to beef up the capabilities of the local government, you know, municipalities in many respects, but it has not actually succeeded because there is still a problem of lack of performance or underperformance of, in terms of service delivery. So I just want to know from you, so then what does FFC recommend in that regard? Because obviously when something does not work, it says something must change. And what is that something? It's obviously it has to do with the policy or something additional to it. Thank you very much.
Before I allow you to come in, Honorable Lenzana, anything from your side?
Thanks, Mr. President. Perhaps to take further what Honorable Kaiso is saying, Dr. Mbava would be when trying to address this that Honorable Kaiso is raising, taking into cognizance that there would be these stringent powers, functions, roles, and responsibilities that are there at those spheres of government. Hence one would think of policy, injunctions, and what have you, because look, all this that we say, like what I was raising, for instance, whether the DDM would be shut down by these prescripts where there would be a level of people being adamant, saying, no, no, wait, this is not your territory. Thanks, sir.
Lord Memezi? Thank you very much, sir. I have no further questions. Matafa?
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered.
Before I allow FFC to come in my last meeting with FFC, can I give you 10 minutes comfort break and then you come back? Look, 10 minutes comfort break and then you come back.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, FFC ladies and gentlemen. I think we can continue the program, and we're at the stage where we wanted FFC to come in and respond and comment on the comments that have been made by the honorable members. Dr. Mbava and the team.
No, thank you so much, Chair, and to the honorable members. Let me first appreciate the level of engagement that we as the FFC always receive from the members, the analysis, the policy interrogation that we always want to engage with. Honorable Chair, I think there are many questions which were asked, and these questions, in my view, also illustrates the role of the policymaker in the sense that there are very difficult policy choices, and there are also opportunity costs that comes with all these policy positions that our government is faced with. Indeed, budget 2024 is a balancing act. It's a budget where we have to make tough choices. There were many questions which were asked. I could answer many of them, but I wanted to just hone in on one question which I think is very important that Honorable Memezi asked about the fact that government departments fail to spend. Why are they failing to spend? What is the impact of this poor spending trend, Honorable Memezi? I think if we wanted to understand the locus of the problem about why there's a spending problem, or maybe to move back forward or move back a bit is to say, during the fiscal year, preparing for the next financial year, government departments, as part of the planning process, must prepare estimates of their expenditure. These estimates of national expenditure then are received by the Minister of Finance, and then now we know that there is planned spending, which is against firm commitments. Now, obviously, we have revenue and we have expenditure. Some of these expenditure items are not going to be able to be funded, and so government must go into the market to borrow. So they go into the market to borrow at money market costs. Because remember, we have now this deficit, but we must still do an allocation to these government departments, but we still have a gap. So we go to the market now to borrow. Now we borrow these huge amounts of money so that we can be able to do this allocation to all these departments. So that money market rate comes at a premium. But now you have these government departments now who receive this allocation, but they hoard this money. They keep this money in their bank accounts. When they keep this money in their bank accounts, they will earn some sort of interest. But if you compare the interest they earn compared to the interest that the government will pay on their money that government borrowed to actually give them an allocation, it's actually minuscule. It's a loss. But then you have to ask yourself, at the end of the day, who is the winner in this process? It's the big banks. Why do I say that? Because the banks have initially lended to government at a premium rate, and now the banks again will use their idle funds, which are sitting in those bank accounts, and re-lend it out again. So it's the banks who are laughing all the way to the bank again. So essentially then, the problem here is that there is a misunderstanding from many departments, including some departments who claim that they have saved money. For instance, we have social development, who have not spent their money in its entirety. The allocation to for SRDs, for instance, we've had many funds returned back to the fiscus, and those are claimed to be savings, but in actual fact, as the Commission, we don't believe that there are savings, because it is costing the fiscus a lot. Because to actually allocate those funds to them was actually at a very high cost. But now, because they have not spent that money, they earn some sort of interest, and they are saying that interest is savings for government. But they are failing to understand that if you compare the two, government is still spending a lot. So I think, Honourable Member, it goes back then to going back to the departments to say, when it comes to doing your annual planning, look at your expenditure items. You must have firm, expenditure plans, not plans that you would not be able to fulfill, because at the end of the day, it is government who is paying far more into these things. And government is paying high interest rates. So I think that is one question. Probably I don't think I'm solving the problem, but I'm just explaining the impact of it. That as taxpayers, we end up paying a lot of money to the private sector, to the banks, to the lenders, and yet we have actually borrowed that money at very high cost. So the other questions I want now, the researchers. In your respective area of expertise, given the questions which are asked by the members, to have a comment or an answer or your thoughts. And then after that, I want the head of research to just wrap it up. So in the order that I will now indicate, it's going to be Tando, Sasha, Sabelo, and Kutso. And then finally, it's going to be Chair. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you, Chair, and again, honourable members, for the opportunity to engage on these issues. So most of the issues that I will, most of the questions that I will speak to revolve around the issue of economic growth, why the economy is not growing, and then linked to that, the issue of unemployment, poverty, and inequality, why we are struggling as a country to resolve those. So maybe let's start off by unpacking the issue of economic growth. So why is the economy not growing? Perhaps you can start from the external environment, as Chairperson was alluding to say, could it be that the fact that the economy initially was its growth and its comparative advantage was based on what many have called the mineral energy complex. And I will unpack it, what it means. It simply means the linkages between electricity generation, which is coal-empowered, and the industries that are around it that are highly intensive in terms of electricity in their production process. So that's exactly what it means. So that was the comparative advantage at a time when the electricity was cheaper, and also coal production as well. But things have changed drastically. We see that now where we are, not only are we having electricity outages, but we are at a position where electricity is now more expensive, and that actually electricity has now become a comparative disadvantage. So a key driver of the economy then has been lost, and so that's the external environment. You can look at it that way, and see what has happened to that. But then you have to ask the question: is the external environment then responsible for the economic drastic economic slowdown that we've experienced since 1994? And then you will have to go deeper and see what has been the impact of the external environment, and try and look at the domestic factors and see actually what is it that is responsible for the economic slowdown. So the external environment, yes, it plays a role, but how much of a role does it play? And then come to the domestic factors then. And there is consensus in literature that when it comes to the domestic sectors, it is the supply side constraints that are stopping the economy from growing. And why we say that, you will know that as way back as 2007, we struggled with the issue of electricity generation when we started having load shedding. So Eskom at the center of it, energy production became a problem. And then secondly, the issues that we've experienced with Transnet, also logistics, how you transport goods from where they are produced to the port, and therefore to your export market. So you will see then that it is those supply side constraints that are stopping the economy from growing. And if that is the case, then maybe before I move on from that, let me explain that the supply side constraints are affecting businesses at production level. So how are they supposed to produce when there is a non-availability of electricity? And even once they've produced, how are they supposed to transport these goods to the market if there are logistic and transport challenges that relate to Transnet? So it's affecting them at that. So you see that business, big businesses have been resilient when it comes to that. They are trying to generate their own electricity to fight that. But you will know that even that is problematic because eventually they will pass that because it means their production costs have gone up because they now they have to generate electricity on their own, and they might pass that to the consumers. And also it means that maybe funds that they will have used to expand are now are being rechanneled to produce electricity. So that's the story. So what you've seen then because of this supply side concern is that what we experience is also this collapse in investment, both public and private investment has collapsed. As a result, then another economic driver of the economy in terms of investment has faded out during this period. So you're not only talking about the competitive advantage that we had previously, you're also talking about investment. So key drivers of the economy have faded up, faded out during this period. So we end up then with an economy that is really dependent on consumption for growth, which is itself is not sustainable. So I want to then link it with the fiscal. But from what I've explained, you will see that these challenges have been persistent, and when they are persistent, it means then they become structural. So it becomes even more difficult to resolve them if they are structural. Now, let's link that then that to fiscal policy. So, in terms of fiscal policy, what we have then is a huge debt that has is the difference between expenditure and revenue. But revenue is linked to economic growth because you have to grow the economy so that you can generate tax revenue that will then fund your expenditure. If that's not the case, then you have a problem because those two key variables in fiscal policy, expenditure and revenue, you continuously having that gap. And then we say then also your fiscal deficit is now structural as well. So that's where we are with. But then National Treasury has been trying to now stabilize government debt using what the chairperson was alluding to, the primary balance. And we know that in the primary balance, there are two variables that you are looking at. You are looking at real interest rate on one side, and you are looking at growth. So in order for this equation to make sense, economic growth must be higher than your real interest rate. But that's not has been the case in South Africa because of the low structural growth that is happening. So in our situation is the other way down, is the other way around. So making it then very difficult to stabilize public debt. So when the last time we were here during the MTPPS, we presented the fact that we think that the fiscal consolidation exercise as pursued by National Treasury is not credible. It's not credible because the equation that they are trying to resolve is not speaking to what they want to do. It can only speak to what they want to do if growth is higher than real interest rate, and that's not the case. So how are they going to achieve this then? So that's the link between the two. So if the economy is not growing, like I'm saying, it becomes difficult then to it becomes a challenge for job creation. I said when I started that the impact is at firm level, so not only are you not going to see job creation because of the low growth, but you are unlikely also to make a meaningful impact on poverty because of the way the economy is structurally economic growth is structurally low. But what is important with regards to unemployment, also the SME sector, you will understand that it's the most important sector when it comes to job creation. Now, if you having and I was saying the big business, they can be resilient when it comes to how to fight maybe load shedding, for instance. But if you are an SME trying to do business in the context of load shedding, how are you supposed to cope with it? And we're saying that the SME sector is critical for job creation. So that tells you why then we're seeing this persistently high unemployment. And it drills down also to the thing about poverty. Coming to GFECRA, we like Chen has already alluded to, we agree with the bill. We understand the balance that it is trying to achieve, and we understand where the chairperson is coming from in saying that it's money that's available to government, and it's money that's supposed to be used by government. But all that we are saying is that let us be cautious that we're not using the GFECRA as a silver bullet to think that we'll resolve our fiscal crisis through GFECRA. We will not, because of the situation that I've already alluded to in terms of growth and its link with fiscal policy. We have to concentrate on those. So there are two aspects here. Why is the economy not growing, and what are the binding constraints? How do we resolve those before we can even start thinking about how we can stimulate the economy? So yes, in that context and looking at the bigger picture, the GFECRA resources would have been deployed in another way if that was the thinking, at looking at the bigger picture, that actually the main problem that we're facing is that of economic growth. So how do we use then GFECRA resources to stimulate or ignite growth? That should be have been the thinking, vis-a-vis how do we finance debt? Because financing debt, like I'm saying, in a context of low growth is unsustainable. It won't work. So the only time it will work is when you decisively solve the issue of economic growth by tackling the supply side constraint. In whatever way it may mean, and we are cognizant of the fact that government has already started empowering ESCOM, for instance. I think we've come here several times reporting on the poor financial performance of SOEs, predominantly ESCOM and Transnet. So, and we've seen government intervening in that regard and providing resources to improve the balance sheet of ESCOM, for instance, and also the operational challenges that ESCOM is dealing with. I think government is starting to deal with those as well, but the progress has been slow, and which is why then we continue to be where we are. And the figures that came out yesterday of 0.1% growth in the fourth quarter and 0.6% for the year tells you the story that we still have an economy that's being undermined by this supply side constraint, and we are not winning the battle there. So the thinking then, we'll have to see how do we address this supply side constraint, and then how after that do we then stimulate the economy. And just to end it up, as a commission, we think that if we are to stimulate stimulate economic growth, we should be thinking about how do we redirect our industrial policy so that it speaks to the greening of the economy, because that's where the world is heading to. So how as South Africa can we play our role there? And there's a lot of things we can do. We can produce goods that will enable the transition to green economy. We can export even the technologies that we have Sasol. Sasol as we've seen the technological advancements that have come from Sasol, we can use those to see how then we can export
you know, technologies that can speak to the income. Chairperson, let me pause here and allow other colleagues to come in, and hope that with this broad explanation of growth and linking to fiscal policy, I've answered the questions on why the economy is not growing, and I've tried to link it to why unemployment, we're not having an impact on unemployment and poverty and inequality, and also then the GFECRA bigger questions that where should the resources have been utilized with GFECRA. We would have loved, lastly, this is the last thing I'm going to say now, we'll have loved a situation where the Reserve Bank and National Treasury sat down and discussed what are the challenges that this economy is facing, and then decide on the deployment of those resources from GFECRA to say, we think that the challenges that we're facing relate to growth, and therefore we'll try and find growth initiatives, rather than to say we're dealing with a situation where the economy, where the fiscus is in trouble. How do we get the fiscus in trouble? But we can't just look at the fiscus in isolation. We must look at the picture, the bigger picture that includes economic growth. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Nando. So I think I have three questions that I'd like to comment on. The first relates to Honorable Memeza's question about ILEMA, LETSEMA, and what can be done to improve that grant.
Sasha, they are too soft.
I'm also not used to the mic.
Okay. Okay, it's Honorable Memeza.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, Honourable Memeza's question on ILEMA, LETSEMA. So, Honourable Member, we looked at the spending performance of ILEMA, LETSEMA since its inception, which was in 2008-09, up until 2021-22, and it's been spent quite effectively at like 97% of the allocated amounts on average have been spent. So better than like CASP, for example. But of course, spending on its own it doesn't speak to the value that's been created. And one important area with respect to this grant, we think reforms can be considered, is the way that is the oversight over the performance of ILEMA, LETSEMA. So when we looked at the grant evaluation report, so every sector department, national sector department that has a conditional grant needs to produce a grant evaluation report that will give you an overview of how each and every province receiving that money performs. So in there it said that they only, they currently only conduct or monitor 10% of the ILEMA, LETSEMA projects that are being implemented, because there's just too many of them and the scope is very broad. So they're obviously taking a sample. So there's a need to strengthen that monitoring or oversight by the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, because without tighter monitoring, we won't know whether we're reaching the targets of that grant, and also importantly whether the money is being used in accordance with the conditions of the grant and the grant framework. So that is a area that could be looked at for reform. With respect to the ECD indirect direct issue, I think firstly the decision to establish a nutrition pilot is really a big step forward with respect to ECD, which has traditionally been a bit more neglected relative to the other parts of the basic education sector. So we really welcome that. But just in terms of whether that the national department will be able to unblock those bottlenecks, there we do have some skepticism, and it goes back to our analysis on the performance of indirect versus direct grants that we did a few years back. And which showed that your national departments don't just automatically perform better than your province or your municipality. But also if we look at the performance of indirect grants in that very sector, in basic education, there's the school's infrastructure backlogs grant, which is the funding instrument for our CD. And members will know that we still have pit latrines, you know, schools don't have libraries, etc. And the performance of, due to the poor performance of the grant, the grant has not been able to be phased out. They've had to extend it numerous times because, you know, it just hasn't met its targets. So even looking at performance of indirect grants in that very sector, it shows that the department does not necessarily have the capacity to roll things out better than subnational. But we do think it's a big step forward that we're having this nutrition pilot. Honorable Chair, Honorable Patelezi, on redirecting funds from non-performing programs, Chair, the approach provides relief in the short term. Of course, it provides that breathing space when you're in a tight fiscal environment, but it cannot be a sustainable long-term solution. Because at the moment we don't have a targeted approach where we know, you know, cuts are sort of just sprayed everywhere. They aimed at education infrastructure, programs relating to food security, etc. And in many instances, those interventions never recover from the cuts. So we don't seem to be moving closer to our socioeconomic and development goals. So we need to find ways of addressing that performance and capacity challenges that confront our departments, because you're continuously cutting to plug holes here and there. It can't be a long-term solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha. Let me respond to few of the questions that I think I'll be able to. The first one will relate to the issue raised by Honorable Mdenzana on the PS and LES, that is Provincial Equitable Share and Local Government Equitable Share, whether to funding that we see for local government and provinces take into account other issues like your COVID-19 and natural disasters that they do occur at a particular point in time. Then I think at a broader level, this formula that we do have are component-based, the PS and the LES, the local government credit share, are component-based, and those components have weight. The funding, particularly for such things like your natural disaster, the COVID-19, would be funded differently and outside the provisions of the PS, because the PS and LEF funding is mainly discretionary to provinces and to the local government. So these are funded differently. They are not factored in when the funding from this instrument is being determined. There is a question on the whether do we believe, as FSC, that a thorough assessment is undertaken before reducing some of the conditional grants. So as the FSC, we wouldn't have a definite answer, but from what we've seen, we are of the view that maybe it's just done as part of fiscal consultation to reprioritize some funding, and then the government will just check where it could reduce some funding and do those cuts. For example, we'll quote examples here to some of these grants that have been mentioned here. Your HSDG, Human Settlement Development Grant, over the years, for the past 10 years, if you track its record, how it has been performing, it has been spending 100% or 98%. If it's underspending, it will only by 2%. And all those provinces where HSDG, all those nine provinces would have spending close to 100 or even above 100. But the grant has been targeted year in and year out. There's been reduction in it. So if there are some other criteria, maybe there are other criteria like reprioritizing other programs, but it's not based for sure on the performance of the grant itself. because they are is performing good. And further on that HSDG, linking it to the question that was raised by the Chair, Honorable Butili, is whether what is the view of the FFC on shifting funds from non-performing to the performing programs. What we've seen of late, of which we're raising almost year in and year out as a commission, is that that was done before. For example, if a province, Eastern Cape, was underperforming with respect to the HSDG, then it was easy to shift funding from Eastern Cape to Gauteng, for example, if Gauteng has overspent already before the year ends. But we've seen recently that that thing has changed, and again, the factor of earmarking funds has also played a role, because HSDG previously would address a number of issues that are relating to the human settlements sector. But now, if you are earmarking, there are some piecemeal, then provinces can't even within as a province shift funds to other programs because of that earmarking that we've seen of late increasing. On wage negotiations and fiscal framework, we believe that some of the agreements that are being made are made maybe for 2 to 3 years. Then the government and the budget at least would know how what is the percentage that has been agreed to. Maybe they could just make some adjustments before that, not to be reactive, because now they react after knowing that wage agreement they said it's going to be 6% maybe next year and 3% the other year. But they are reactive now after that year has passed, and then now they have to provide funding through adjustments. I think those are the questions that I wanted to respond. And then let me hand over to Kufa.
Yeah. Thanks, Sabelo. And thanks, Chair. So I'll be taking you through, Chair, a few of the questions that relate to the local government sphere. Firstly, on the issue of capacity building within municipalities. So the issue of capacity building within our municipalities and the amount of capacity building grants that are there, whilst we still see that really municipalities are still facing issues of dysfunctionality due to this. The problem here is that, Chair, as the grants evolve, what we find is that as the capacity building grants evolve, there's a lot of fragmentation of the grants, wherein really the purpose becomes generic and does not really speak to the needs of the municipality in its entirety. Also now, due to a lack of a commonly accepted definition of functionality and in the same vein, dysfunctionality, a set of attendant measurable indicators, the list of these dysfunctional municipalities and their order of priority differ depending on the institution that is undertaking the assessment, now being SALGA, COGTA, National Treasury. So now, while government has over the years implemented these various interventions to address the issue of performance, poor performance in municipalities, there's still not much realizable impact. Also, in instances where there exists that common understanding of functionality and by order dysfunctionality, from a capacity building point of view, it is also imperative that there is a coordinated and a holistic approach that addresses weaknesses in the enabling environment itself, at both the organizational and the individual human capital levels. And importantly, the roles, the responsibilities, and the governance arrangements should also be streamlined to support local government capacity building while also avoiding duplication and ensuring a coordinated approach within government. In terms of the recommendations that the FFC has made in this regard in the past, in the 2020-2021 submission on the division of revenue, we made a number of recommendations regarding the capacity building grants. Firstly, we recommended that roles and responsibilities should be defined, and governance arrangements underpinning the building of a quality local government civil service through MOUs, which will improve and strengthen coordination among government departments that are building capacity of municipalities in order to avoid the duplication that exists and also the gaps between different role players, while also paying specific attention to the requirements of any particular municipality that is receiving the intervention. Secondly, we recommended that based on a specific assessment, the needs of a municipality should be taken into account. And also in consultation with provincial governments, the needs should be prioritized by providing technical support for new systems, innovative business processes, and the redesign and change management. And lastly, we recommended that the Minister of Finance should conduct regular assessments of the minimum competency regulations to determine their impact and whether they are tangible improvements as a result of complying. We still see in a lot of municipalities, mostly those in the KZN, from a report that we got from COGTA last year, that a lot of the councillors there and also people in high positions in the municipalities still lack the minimum competencies to run the municipalities, which now becomes a problem in the midst of all the conditional grants that we have, mostly capacity building grants that we have that should be capacitating municipalities. It is very worrisome. On the question of the DDM here, and we agree with Honorable Mnenzana that this is a very important policy. It can improve really budgeting and planning within government. But what will this involve in government? It will involve aligning budgets with development priorities, while also ensuring transparency and optimizing resource allocation for impactful projects. But what will be important regarding the DDM is that if you want to realize the most positive impact from this policy, proper financial planning, monitoring, and accountability mechanism will be essential to support the model and for it to achieve the intended results. And in the heart of this is the idea of a one-plan budget, which is very important since we need that intergovernmental fiscal relation, intergovernmental fiscal coordination. On the question of local government and economic growth from the Honorable Chair, how can local government really help in realizing economic growth? Simply, Chair, by the role of government in of local government in improving growth is through creating that enabling environment where businesses will thrive. Let's build the roads, let's build proper sanitation systems, water systems, all the proper infrastructure that a business would be comfortable in establishing itself in that particular area. So we still lack a lot in that area. Look at our spending on the municipal infrastructure grant. To this day, the grant, one of the most important grants for establishing proper infrastructures within municipalities, is still being underspent by 20% or so, which is also concerning. I think those are the questions that I wanted to attend to.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Before I go, if you allow it, I'd like to give to one of our interns, Hoponso, to answer as instructor, Chair, if you allow.
Thank you, Chair. You asked the question about how can the budget assist with inequality. The first one, Chair, I think that we could use the budget by increasing government expenditure. in order to provide services, social services, that is education, housing, health, and also infrastructure development and infrastructure maintenance. We could also have progressive tax in order to redistribute wealth, and I think that's where the income, the wealth tax comes in order for to redistribute the wealth to disadvantaged people. Also, we could have job training programs to create employment and encourage entrepreneurship to low-income households, I think is what another thing that Kuto mentioned in his last statement. And another thing also is to ensure transparency and accountability so that we prevent misuse of funds and corruption, because I think that corruption is a constraint in achieving equality. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. Thanks for the questions. Yes, I shall quickly run through the first few questions. Honourable Mizana, we do and we have done as FFC site visits to go into the local municipalities, in especially the most recent one. We have paid a visit to Magaun municipality, looking especially at their agriculture and farming activities there, and that's where we came across the precision farming methodologies that could, and it is in our submission, to increase the productivity and results, particularly on grants such as Litsema. So it is rather disappointing that that some of these grants, despite good performance, yes, we may still have, you know, could agree or and improve on the conditions thereof. For instance, increasing the performance monitor measures on the outcome of those agriculture grants. But alas, sometimes the reprioritization worked in the wrong way, or targeted way, it can cause quite a lot of damage. In terms of performance of the last 30 years, I think I want to answer this one, because this is and has been discussed in many literatures. But to pick off the key point is that it's not that we haven't, over the past 30 years, created jobs. It's just not enough of the jobs. And I think, and I'll go into some of the low-hanging fruits, which I think are missed opportunities for South Africa, and which are also adding on to what Tando said earlier about the broader picture of the macroeconomic growth. But in essence, is that we have, you know, 30 years ago, and with the dawn of the democracy, there was the, also apart from the you know, liberal sort of liberation and of course the political transition, but also that households increased, people grew, our population size increased by tremendous margins, and also that the entrance of the labor force into the labor markets has sort of grew much faster than the employment creation opportunities that the government and also, I want to say, our industries are able to create, which is the missed opportunity. I'll come back to this issue again. But the 250% growth, the point we want to drive in here as FFC is that we need to be very cautious about this 250% growth not being just a nominal growth alone. We need to look at it in terms of the real growth. What is it, has it brought us? What has it given us? What have we bought with this just money, you know, that has gone, and in terms of figures that has grown this much? And this ultimately, it transfers the quality and how much quality that it has actually delivered in terms of this nominal growth. And in terms of the, then brings into the issue of infrastructure and how we can critique on it, is that I think there is a great missed opportunity, and this is one of the big points I want to bring in, together with the local development. I think there is a great missed opportunity, despite all the achievements, right, like I said, employment and growth, and even we've survived through you know, various external shocks and domestic crises, is that there is a great missed opportunity where we should have probably incorporated, infused this local development with infrastructure development, and to grow from the basic services, and particularly that of, as Kutsal said, water, electricity, access to them, as per the constitution, but also the consistency of that delivery. And quality of that delivery. Recently, we had the opportunity of having the 2022 census, and FFC we are building actually a map of the access to various quality and levels of, for example, water. Is it pipe water? Is it community water tap outside? Or is it you have to go somewhere to use a bucket to pick it up? And or sanitation, is it a flush toilet, is it a bucket toilet, and those things. And one just quickly comes to the issue of this opportunity where this local development, infrastructure development, and local city or local regional planning integration. We did not do, as earlier also Honourable Member pointed out, that where is the IDP in consideration of the budget in terms of the fiscal framework? So that is a great missed opportunity. And yes, on the same note, I want to emphasize this HSDG and informal settlement upgrade grants, despite the reductions being the result of underspending and all the other sort of performance, performance measure issues, and that's why it was reduced. However, again, the government did not see it as part of this infrastructure development and local development. And for instance, HSDG, where the top structures are supposed to be built, it's not just that. It's not just the houses, but actually you have to think about roads, you have to think about how the water must be supplied to it, how the sanitation, how the refuse system is going to work. And all that is all, it's not integrated. Where's the problem in terms of that? Well, various. For example, HSDG actually is a provincial grant, and then the grant goes into local government. Now, local government goes and build, but it hasn't the MOU in between the department and the municipality sometimes just don't see this picture of how to integrate all of these critical elements for local development to grow, and so that is a great opportunity that I think government is goes into the next term must consider. And again, the way to that as Parliament and also FFC is in researching this particular matter, we should actually pay more site visits, and hopefully we can do that together going forward. Wealth tax, yes, is about the progressivity of the transfer and the redistributive mechanisms, but it's also what we are redistributing. Do we just want to give it once off money, or is it the skills, the ability, and the capability to sustain that transfer and sustain that, so that the wealth does not just sit in rent and cents, but actually the person is able to take that and further that wealth into the future, as in income and as, you know, as welfare, and then into building a household for the next generation. And that's the intergenerational wealth transfer mechanism, I think. And in South Africa, we have invested a lot into education, no doubt about it. We have invested a lot into social development, but we never really connected it. EPWP, for instance, is one great another great missed opportunity where we're just creating jobs, but we fail to tie that in with some of the social important elements like schools, like health care system and access, so that the person is not only just, fine, I'm here for the EPWP, 21, 22 maybe, for the financial year, and next year I don't know where I'm going. And I lose all the, and I don't, and I got sick, and all those other things. Those, so, which brings to me, which brings to the next question about reprioritization. I want to emphasize that reprioritization, yes, it is about taking and reallocation. But as I said, we also need to pay attention to, in terms of the reprioritization, that sometimes it does not just, you know, because every single program, for it to perform, there is a critical mass where it needs to kind of reach before it can have the optimal capability and ability to deliver. And reprioritization, and so as FFC, we're not saying that just move things, but we're also saying that we need to be targeted. It needs to be well justified and researched in terms of the reprioritization. And earlier, my chairperson has already spoken about the tightening of the underspending and those should. And also be considered in terms of this reprioritized, great reprioritization framework. I want to quickly jump to, and similar idea actually should come in when it comes to the wage bill, is that wage bill, we tend to treat it, and for the good benefits that we have a sense of how much to increase the year, the next year, and the following, but it's also the structure of that salary, of those the salary wage bill. I think we need to pay quite careful attention there, because it, as also pointed out by the president, and also wage bill is a compensation for public sector service and productivity. If your productivity deviates too far from what we are paying, that is a structural problem. I hope you would agree. I think coming to Honourable Chair, your good question about GFECRA, why can't it be used maybe for other means other than debt, is that, and I saw your question yesterday, and I was thinking to myself, thankfully, that we still have paying our debt back in mind, is because if we use this money for the paying of debts, then whatever money that we are supposed we would otherwise have had to commit to pay off the debt is then used for public spending. And if we don't do that, then the question becomes that are we ever going to pay the debt back? Which sends out quite a bad signal in terms of to our investors. And I want to say investors do watch these things, and they do watch how and the reasoning behind what we are using the funds for. And that's why, as FFC, with regards to GFECRA, our answer is not, it's not binary again. It's not yay or nay. It's okay, but have we considered these risks? And we are saying that in terms of this bill, the terms and conditions and where the National Treasury, between National Treasury and SARB, they have said, yes, in case of exchange rate further depreciates, we would have other mechanisms, i.e. National Treasury would step in, and therefore we support the bill.
So it is both a macroeconomic consideration, but at the same time we also use our policy analysis and judgments to say that the risk is there of using the reserve, but at the same time it is accounted for, and therefore we support this bill in its form. I want to about economic growth. This one, Sanzo has spoken quite extensively about, and but I want to say, remember in our 2022-23 annual submission, we've emphasized on this product value chain localization. This is another great missed opportunity, I think, in South Africa that we didn't consider when we grow. We didn't consider that when we grow, we can't just grow an industry on its own. We have to think about when we grow and when we produce, right, all the inputs that we put into it, right, the labor, the capital, the infrastructure. But then where does this product go next? That is the problem. Our mineral resource and investments that have gone into it and our wealth were not optimally used at the moment, and also in the past 30 years, and hence a loss opportunity. At the moment we are just mining these raw materials, and then we export, right, at much lower cost, and then other people would, the foreigners will then refine it for us, and then we have to buy it back. That's a great missed opportunity. Is there not a way that we could localize this product, our wealth, through our own system in the local sense to create jobs here, and to the point to the final good, then we sell it. Then we sell it at a much higher price. That's how we should have grown our economy and localize our economy in terms of, and gain all the, and this is the point, to gain all the employment creation benefit, job benefits, creation benefits that we could possibly get along this value chain and creation process. And lastly, I want to say, as FFC, we really thank the and we really support our young economists and essentially future generations to join this conversation, because sometimes age does take a toll, and it limits our sometimes point of view, and in here I'd just like to encourage that just as much these young people are willing to learn. Right, us that are already here in the system, we also share as much possible as possible the skills, the knowledge, and also the our time essentially with them, and then hopefully they will also appreciate and learn with us in this. Admittedly, sometimes it's an evolving topic and policy environment and future of South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. In closing, Chair, just to also appreciate the fact that this committee has a huge role to play in terms of informing the economic trajectory of our country. So the decisions that the Appropriations Committee take, as informed by all the stakeholders, have a huge impact in terms of our economy and also the sustainability of our fiscus. Thank you so much.
Chair and the team, thank you very much. A few comments from my side. Let me start with the intents. It's very good that you are being exposed to this. It's when you listen to these things that you are able to say, yeah, economics, which part of economics is interesting me? Because when we are here, we go all over, we fiscal policy, we are into monetary policy, we are into trade policy, and so on and so forth. So you start thinking, I like this one. I can remember when you still do these things, you do everything. So as you go up, then you start channeling yourself into a particular field. So it's good that you are exposed to the entirety of the field that you are in. I also wanted to say, you'll always hear us talking up when they're making presentation, they'll say, in the MTF, that's what we do, and so on, right? MTF. What does MTF mean? It's very important. When we talk about the budget, we always do it in 3 years, right? It's a multi-year budgeting, so we look at 3 years. There's a reason for that we look at the MTF period. In other places they call it multi-year operating budget, MYOP, and so on, depending where you are. But it helps all of us to create some certainty. Economic agents want some certainty so that they can plan for eventualities. They can know where you are heading to, and so on and so forth. Hence 3 years. So that's why sometimes we don't understand when people don't spend their budget, because they know about 3 years in advance that at least, even with some deviations, of course. But that's what is there for us. So why don't you plan for that? And so on. So it's something which is very important. Throw it in. There's always this thing that only 8 million people are paying tax. That's not true. Everybody who gets into the shop and buy pays VAT. So that people who like, I know they'll be talking about personal income tax, but they just do use it loosely. Only 8. That's not true, right? Even the Magogo somewhere in the Sigisigi pays tax and so on. So that's why we should account to everybody about how we use their taxes. I just thought, again, I need to throw that one in. I once had in my previous life a meeting with the tax industry. And in that meeting, the main things that we're complaining about, but we made sure that in that meeting there was the then a commissioner of SARS, there was the CEO of PIC. I think the main complaint that they have is that they are being financed at a very high rate, around about 28%. How is it possible, said to be a very risky industry and so on? So we're trying to deal with that. And they're saying we're not subsidized. Buses are subsidized, trains are subsidized, but to carry the biggest number of commuters, we're not subsidized. So when you talk to people, they say, but they don't pay tax. And in the presentation, they said, but how is that possible? We buy cars, we pay VAT. We buy tires, we pay VAT. We are the biggest consumers of petrol. We pay fuel levy and so on. So this can't be true. And they were saying, you know, everybody else is making money out of the tax industry except the owners. And if you look at all this consumption and so on and so forth, and in fact, I still don't understand why don't they own a big chunk of these manufacturers, especially Toyota in South Africa. I'm throwing all these things because I want to interest you in a number of things. Also these things which are you find that they end up being accepted as truth and truth only, whereas they are not. They are meant to perpetuate a certain stereotype against people. Inequality in the country is one of the biggest constraints to economic growth. Right, it's one of the biggest constraints, and so on as to how, again, I leave that. I would love you, Chen and your team, to look into that. I'm saying inequality is the biggest constraint to economic growth, right? And again, inequality in this country was not God given. Somebody created it, so somebody must dismantle that. Okay, having in everywhere, let me come back to the meeting. And on on behalf of the of the committee, on my behalf, on behalf of the support staff of the committee, let me thank you, Chen and the team, about the interaction that we've had as a committee, a very important institution, the FFC, when we deal with these issues of budget and budget-related issues. We might not have agreed on everything that you said. You might not have agreed with us, but it's in the nature of social science, as I said yesterday, that when it comes to social science, we don't need to, there's a lot of subjectivity. It's unlike natural science, hydrochloric acid in whatever it goes, HCl, can't change it. 1 + 1 = 2. You can't change it. That's natural science. Here, we're not sure whether when you put in a C in your GDP equation, it's going to result in the GDP that you want. That's why we always say when you deal with economic issues, we like saying ceteris paribus. That's how we cover ourselves. Everything remaining equal, because you know they never remain equal. So when you come back to me, we are very good in explaining as economists why things didn't happen. Why was our estimate of GDP not what we said it was going to be? But it's in the nature of the science that we're involved in. But Chair, out of the best, as FFC, why I'm saying this, my program says that for this administration is the last time you are interacting with our committee. And out of the best, it has been a good journey for us as this committee. I think our last meeting as the committee is towards the end of the month. Yep. That,
do you have any other thing now, Chair, please?
Okay. No. We're already overshot the meeting. We've got other meetings, but this brings us to the end of the meeting. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry. Is it for the meeting? Okay, that's fine. So we'll deal with the matter in our next meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.